Hey everyone, just so you know, this podcast will contain spoilers for all of the His Dark Materials books, as well as the series and all the episodes we've watched so far. So if you haven't read the books and you don't want to get spoiled on the general story,
read the books.
This is different from last year when we talked about the television show, but we just think it's a more interesting conversation if we can tie in all the context from the books. So read the books because they're awesome, or don't mind if you get spoiled listening.
Living on Ratatouille.
All week.
Guys, I'm obsessed with the Ratatouille TikTok musical.
He's obsessed with the Ratatouille TikTok musical.
The Ratatouille.
Extraneous Ratatouille TikTok musical coming to you soon.
A deep dive into the world of TikTok, the world of teens, the world of Ratatouille.
Hello.
Hi.
Welcome to Extraneous.
I'm Will.
I'm Melissa.
And we are His Dark Materials.
We are hopped up on coffee and excited to talk about this episode.
Oh, yeah.
But first. Have you done your holiday shopping yet?
We sure haven't.
We definitely have not. But if you know a lot of geeky, nerdy people like us, like you listening to this podcast.
Yeah, like probably our extensive fan base.
Yeah, possibly everybody you know and like to talk to is nerdy and geeky like us.
Uh-huh.
Go to mischiefmerch.com and check out our stuff because we keep rolling out cool stuff. And we think you're going to find lots and lots of gifts there for the people in your life.
Like Jordan College sweatshirts.
I swear, if nobody gets a Jordan College sweatshirt for the holidays, what will we have been doing with our lives?
I know. What are we doing? What are you doing?
I spend more energy pushing this Jordan College sweatshirt on people than most things.
Right. And it's for their own good. It's for your own good,
it's
yes.
It's for your own good.
But it's a good thing too. Yeah. And while you're looking for maybe cool things to get the geek, the nerd, the cool guy or gal or person in your life, we have a Patreon. You could get someone a Mischief Management Media Patreon.
What a good idea.
Gift. Yeah. So our Patreon, patreon.com/makingmischief. As we say, you get the whole Mischief world. It's not just Extraneous or Nonplussed or, you know, whatever your favorite podcast is. It's all of your favorite podcasts. There are extra episodes. There's art.
This week
articles.
There's some extra material at the end of Subtle Knife that we didn't cover on the pod. We did cover it on Patreon and we dig deep into Will Perry's life, his existence, his travels, and how similar or not similar he may be to Asriel.
Oh, yeah. We go way deep on this.
Probably a little more than we meant to.
Yeah. And we get into it a little bit,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, yeah. It's fun.
Yeah, there's some disagreement. It's fun. It's spicy.
Listen to us fight on Patreon. All right.
Yeah.
Patreon.com/makingmischief. We will see y'all there.
Let's get into it.
Episode two.
Am I allowed to say that am I going to ruin my rep?
Was your rep that you didn't like the show? Or was that just your private rep that we didn't admit on the podcast?
Yeah, I hope maybe the latter. I don't want to be known for this, like the asshole who doesn't actually like the show. But I didn't like the first season very much.
I think you were disappointed that it wasn't as good as the books for you. Like I can like feel your disappointment that these books that you had just experienced in such a big way, it just wasn't coming off the screen for you.
That's true. And I mean, that's setting the show up for failure to begin with, right?
Every comparison.
Yeah. But also, I thought there were some real, real serious missteps in season one. Obviously, we talked all about it. Season two.
I love this season.
Yeah, it's good.
I think two episodes into last season, we were already kind of real nervous about where things were going.
Yeah.
Not so.
It wasn't gripping. Even when there wasn't anything like blaringly wrong with season one, for me, it was just kind of like bland. Like I didn't get excited watching it.
I loved a lot of it. I fell off the wagon when they didn't do the demon separation scene right. That for me was just such a key core moment. I don't think it was handled correctly, but not to retrace old wounds. They have a co-writer. There is a marked difference in the emotionality and the kind of like non-literal but yet correct leaps.
Right. It's they're like relaxing in the world instead of like we have to hit this beat and then we have to hit this beat.
Right.
And the first season, I don't know, like Tom Hooper directed a lot of it.
Yes.
Who I'm not. He's just so blah.
I'm not wild about him either.
Most people are. I feel they like blah. Like he'll get you a return on investment, no question. Jack Thorne and Tom Hooper. You're going to make money off it. But it's just kind of blah. But there, yeah, there's like a lived-in quality to these episodes.
Yeah.
There's so much talent on the screen in terms of acting. And I think, and you said this too, Will and Lyra are both like much better than they were last season. Like they're young.
They're old. They're getting older. I didn't have any problem with either of them last season. I liked them both a lot last season.
Yeah.
It just, you can tell that they are maturing and becoming better actors. And it says in the credits, they have acting coaches. It's very, they clearly have chemistry together.
Yeah.
They have that ineffable whatever together. That's really wonderful to see. Where do we think Will's like 15, almost 16?
Yeah.
Way older than the books, which again, good call.
That's fine. Yeah. It's like making Arya not 11 or 8 or whatever she is in the books in Game of Thrones.
Right.
Like, that's fine. She can be a little older. So we open with Will is like running through the logistics of like where they're going and what they're doing. And Lyra is just so excited to be going into a different world. She's like trying to dress up for the part.
She's so funny. She's got a big giant hat and a cape. And she's like, how do I look?
Yeah.
And Will's like, no.
No capes.
No hats. She's like, nah.
Right.
Their banter and their clear like of each other. And they're like poking at each other already.
It's wonderful. So cute. And like the no capes, like you can tell that that's probably like the seventh time today that he's told her no capes.
He's like, no capes.
No capes.
So what about this cape?
No sombreros.
You just haven't seen the right cape.
Yeah.
We wear a cape. And it's so Lyra to just be flouting the rules that he's trying to lay down. It's really delightful.
Also, and we apologize for not even commenting on this last week. Mm-hmm. Red Panda Pam.
We did comment on it last week, but we didn't give it nearly the amount of time it needs. Red Panda Pan is the best pan.
He is the best pan.
Red pandas are like destructive, right?
They're playful.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. Great.
Yeah. And this is like extra chubby Red Panda. I love it.
He's a chonk.
He's a chonk.
I love pandas a chonk. Do you think demons weigh? They must weigh something.
Yeah, because they fight with each other. Right. Yeah, I think they do.
Anyway, a delightful scene and also like a functional scene of Will laying out. We have to blend in. This is what Will's good at. Will is good at blending in. He's wearing a gray hoodie and jeans. Right. Like he's like, this is the point. He's putting pen in a bag. Pan's just like, oh, I don't want to go in a bag.
He's like normcore, bro. We're going normcore.
Normcore? All these cores, cottagecore, normcore. Oh, yeah. You've always mentioning cores. What's normcore? Being normal?
First of all, my main answer is I have no idea. I hear these words that are spoken by young people and then I repeat them to Melissa and she thinks I'm like cool and tied into things. I have no idea. I think it's just like, it's basically like Will. It's like for a brief time in LA, it was cool for teens to like dress normally, like a t-shirt and jeans. It's like dadcore-y kind of.
There's another core. He just runs around saying core.
You know what?
We go for a walk, core.
I just want the Ratatouille TikTok teens to like me.
Is it choreo like boreal? That is choreo. Peak. I don't know where we go bar-core. After that. It's bore.
So they go second minute of the episode.
Second minute, they go to the Oxford.
And nice little like switch between Chidagatse and Oxford. It's just like a quick cut. That's like a very. It's like a hard cut, so that you notice it's a cut. It's just a little like nice directorial flourish.
Also, they managed to keep the accident that happens with Lyra in without making it a big deal.
Yeah. Right.
Also, that guy hit and run Lyra and didn't even stop. They were going. Literally hit a girl in the street and didn't stop.
That didn't even occur to me. And it's kind of a glancing blow, but still.
I mean, she still cuts her knee.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like, I'm not worried about that. I don't have time for this.
It's like they think they're in the middle of New York or something.
These damn normcore teens. I got places to be.
But Will, in his adorable way, she goes, well, they don't have cars that go this fast in my world. And he's like, they don't have the word weight either.
Oh, yeah. Love it. Little dig.
They're really getting at who Will is. He is a control-taking person.
He is.
And he gets mad. Not mad, but he needs Lyra to listen to him. He needs it. And she's not.
Yeah, the dynamic is awesome.
He's a caretaker. He's been a caretaker his whole life. And I find it really thoughtful and fantastic that they are being true to that.
Yeah, we joke about it, but you're right. It is serious. It's like part of who he is. Whereas Lyra is like the definition of careless.
Just walking chaos.
Right.
Control and chaos. Just yeah. The two of them are just, and there's a lot of like balance and yin yang themes, and it makes a lot of sense.
100% it does, right.
So they head out into main Oxford where they pass Boreal.
Lyra very quickly recognizes kind of where they are in Oxford, and she just takes off at a full sprint because she thinks that she is heading towards Jordan College. Like, some of the buildings are the same, and she takes this like passage. This was a really wonderful scene.
Yeah.
This was like first episode Lyra, book Lyra, you know, just like sprinting through the halls of Oxford. It was a really beautiful callback to like who Lyra is. But then we get the disappointment.
The tension I felt during all of this for Pan. Like,
yeah, you made a great point.
He's in a bag. If her purse gets snatched, she will die. Like, he could change and get out, but he'd have to know what was going on. Like, this world is so dangerous for Pan.
Yeah.
And maybe she should have, like, taped him to the inside of her shirt or something. Because if she gets separated from her bag, which she doesn't realize is, like, really possible in our world, she could die. And I know that she doesn't, but... Or if he gets hooked on something and, you know, I mean, they have some space to go, but it's something else.
Jordan College is not there. And it's an interesting little feint because, like, was Jordan College there under a different name before they rebuilt whatever it was? Or was it always been, who knows what was there?
Yeah, but we did a little back of the napkin detective sleuthing on this area. And we see her running down Bracenose Lane and near New College Lane, which this is Oxford. She is running through Oxford.
Totally.
It's New College in Oxford, which is where they said they filmed it. We did a little peering on Google Earth of all the beautiful buildings that she runs past. Back to the Magisterium. We have so much to say about the Magisterium.
We really do. So we open with the funeral, which is apparently being held in the hangar for Air Force One.
Yes, seriously. It's in the Javits Center. What is happening?
Yeah, right, exactly.
What is happening?
Man, you know the Magisterium's rich when they can afford the Javits Center.
That's absolutely
true.
It's
a very New York-specific joke.
Mrs. Coulter's there. She's the head of the oblation board. She's big at the Magisterium. Mm. She's fake crying. She's like literally crying. We know she doesn't care about, I mean, she killed him.
Yeah.
So good acting, Mrs. Coulter.
Yeah, good acting. It reminded me of Cersei, of like using like sincere emotions for insincere ends or whatever that Tyrion line is.
Mrs. Coulter in the show, we just have to accept, is different than in the books.
Yes.
And I'm starting to warm to who season two is making her into as opposed to who she was in season one.
Right.
I think there's a knife's edge difference.
Like you've been saying a lot, she cares about Lyra in a way. Like Lyra is her primary motive, which obviously in future books will be, but for the first two books really isn't.
No, she hears that Lyra is Eve and she decides to destroy her. Like this woman that we are watching in this show is giving up her whole world to protect Lyra. She's a mother first. They just like sort of swept away this religious fervor. I mean, she did have it in the first, but they are already prioritizing Mrs. Coulter, who prioritizes Lyra, which makes sense for the ultimate resolution of her character and how much time you're going to get to kind of feel it.
Yes.
In the end.
I still think Ruth Wilson is chewing the scenery in a way that I find a little off-putting at times. Mm-hmm. But I think it's better than season one. And I think throughout the whole series, there's going to be like little things she does that are going to like irk me, little choices. But if you take her as sort of a unique character, which I think is awesome, I'm all for, she could be like this really kind of complex, sort of like storm-tossed personality. Like there's always a million things going on in her face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We got a lot more kind of like close-up face acting this time.
The face acting.
The face acting is there. So Father MacPhail is using this moment to radicalize the Magisterium against the witches. He has seized on this moment, the way that we've seen political leaders do, to further inflame his base at this funeral. Really naked ambition there.
Yeah. He's an interesting character. I continue to think that his performance is really well done. He is a man of sincere faith.
A fanatical sincere.
Yeah, it's a fanatical faith. So it's like, anything I do can be justified in light of my ultimate goals. So one thing about this scene is when you look at the big panoramic shots, there are demons.
Lots of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we counted at least four or five in the funeral scene. This is one situation where they could have gotten away with it because it seems that every demon in the Magisterium is the same color as their clothes.
Right. And most of them are like disgusting small insects.
Do you think they ever look around and are like, oh, could we be the bad guys? Our demons are spiders and, you know, crows and rats.
I do wonder about that. It's like, do you think Mitch McConnell ever looks over at Truck Grassley and is like, hey, are we the bad guys?
It's possible.
Are we not doing this correctly? Nah.
But again, this imposing fascistic view.
Yeah, very interesting. I will say they have a really set aesthetic for the Magisterium. It's like a fascist theocracy. You know, it's very Handmaid's Tale. I wonder if the Handmaid's Tale, which is creating a very similar world, has had any actual tangible influence on the design. Like the soaring sort of Albert Speer type architecture. And then you see the churchmen in the foreground with like the armed soldiers in the background of all these scenes. Mm-hmm. I will say it's affecting.
So the next thing we see is Will is tending to Lyra again. Caretaker. Yeah. He bought a pack of Band-Aids.
Right.
Because of course he did. And they're starting to talk about the Botanic Gardens already. This is a big, he's pushing my arm again. When I say Will's hitting me, what he's doing is pushing my arm enthusiastically. Yeah, he's nudging me again right now. Like literally as I'm talking about
guys, it's the Botanic Gardens. They mention them.
I screamed, I think, when I first.
Yeah.
It's so smart. It's so right. This has to be their place. This has to be something that they have in common. This has to be something somewhere where they feel safe. It has to be their place. And it's only going to get more throughout the episode. They go and they sit and they have their first real conversation in the Botanic Garden on their bench. I lost my mind when I saw their bench. I think I paused it and I just stared at the screen for like, like 15 seconds or something?
And just taking it in. Pan behind them on the bench, a little white pan.
But they're already like making eyes at each other.
Yeah, totally.
There's already a tenderness between them.
Big time.
Which is beautiful. Time. Will has his phone.
Right.
And Lyra's like, what is that thing? Like, it's like she's a Gen Xer asking why you're always on that thing. She's like, what is that thing? Why do you carry it around? It's like, Lyra, you have a thing that you carry around that you can't keep here. You can't stop fiddling with. So maybe not with the judgment.
Right.
But anyway, she says, what is that? And he says, it tells you things, you know?
Yeah.
And so he got himself a portable charger so he can charge his phone because the
smart.
We've wondered before what it would be like if people had cell phones in this and they're handling it, you know?
Yeah, it's really cool. Everyone has an iPhone. And you don't get service in other worlds.
You don't get service
including the witches.
What's great though is that once he has the knife, when he needs to charge his phone, he can just cut a hole to an outlet someplace.
Plug it in, come
back
later.
Plug it in at night, wake up and close the hole.
So it'll see just a hand reach out.
You won't even see it. It'll just be a little plug-in.
Yeah.
He should. That's absolutely what he should do.
It's a whole new marketing opportunity for Apple.
Right, though. So Lyra has this way in to talk about the alethiometer. And she just says, it told me you're a murderer. It's like, Lyra.
It's Lyra.
Work on your pitch, girl.
Lyra does everything like this.
She does.
And I love the consistency about it. And then you get a sense that the people she grew up playing with, all the kids, the Egyptians and the street kids, that they weren't like free of the influence of the Magisterium, but they were just kind of overlooked by it.
So Will peels away, leaving Lyra alone in a foreign world, which is wild.
It's a wild decision.
It is.
Everything you've seen about Lyra, every decision you've seen her make, and you think you could just give her a time of day.
Right.
Meet me back here, and that's actually going to happen. It's a wonder that she is not in, like, Siberia by 8 p.m., you know? Like, when is Lyra ever?
Also, does she have a watch?
Right, exactly. Does she know what 5 p.m. even means?
Yeah, I don't think...
I mean, they have time in Lyra's world, don't know how they...
Yeah, I don't think they count it that way.
Yeah.
I think it's like dawn and dusk and midday and, you know, all that.
Eight bells of the clock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, Lyra, he tears off to go find what he needs to find. And Lyra heads off to the Pitt Rivers Museum.
Mm-hmm. Which they filmed. At the Pitt Rivers Museum. You said that looks so cool. We should go.
We need to go.
Yeah.
It's a real place. It's really in Oxford. It really is the one they mention in the books. They actually say she goes there because it looks like her Oxford. It's more like her Oxford. So she heads there.
Yeah.
And there she finds a corner to open and ask it where to find the scholar. And they don't do the 30,000 years skull thing. She doesn't ask the thing about that. Cute shot of Pan disapproving of this museum's policy on stuffed animals.
Yeah. He doesn't like the polecat that's stuffed.
I found it interesting when Lyra asked the alethiometer where the scholar was. She doesn't have the full fluency with it yet, I guess, because she says, it says bells. Which saint had bells? And Pan's like, oh, St. Peter. So that must mean St. Peter.
Right.
I think by this point, she's sort of like more fluent with it. So it was interesting that they like included an interpretation moment.
Right, that she's learning. And I guess the connection of like, oh, bells means a saint. Like, which saint, though?
Right.
And then Pan's like, oh, St. Peter's, because I guess he paid attention that day and Lyra didn't.
Yeah, I guess so. So it tells her to look for a door with a mountain on it. And then it tells her, focus on the boy, help find his father. So in the same scene, she's interpreting it rather well.
Yeah, right.
Oh, but maybe this is the problem where the alethiometer can't do proper names. I think in the books it can. She achieves a fluency later. Where it can, but this time it shows you how carefully they're thinking through this.
I agree. And I love that. I love showing us that she is still mastering this this thing, which is like, there's no roadmap really. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like she's dealing with divine truth. I'm dealing with, by the way, an entity that we bring up, I feel like, every episode. We still have no idea who she's really talking to. Like, we know it's dust, which is angels, which is
dark matter, which is
we've talked about, but like, there are core mysteries here that we still don't understand.
Yeah. I mean, she runs past those mannequins and they light up.
Yeah.
What was that?
Yeah. So our theory on that is that those were made very, very early in sort of humankind's like making of things.
Yeah.
Like, very late Neolithic-ish.
Like, he's looking at me like I know whether or not that's true.
I don't know. They seem too elaborate to be like too much like caveman-y, you know? It was long after like Lascaux or something like that. Okay. But way, way, way back. And so I guess they're infused with dust. You get the sense, like if Mary Malone could look at her through her amber spyglass, that she would see dust like swirling around Lyra.
Mm-hmm.
Like Lyra is more than most people like charged with it.
Because she's so curious.
Oh, that's interesting.
She's incredibly curious. She's the embodiment of curiosity.
She's the perfect receptacle for it.
Yeah.
Oh, I never had that thought. I'd love that. Yeah.
So she runs through this museum and she goes by Mr. Boreal.
Mr. Boreal.
Who is Borealing over some exhibits.
We're really going to stretch this one out, folks. It's going to be a long few weeks.
He's being a little bit of a creeporeal.
He's a creeporeal, that's for sure.
She goes to Boreal the creeporeal. But they have this kind of delightful conversation.
They really do. And this is where what we were talking about with like letting some of these actors breathe a little bit instead of just like hitting this point and then this point and then this point. The script has a lot of space in it. And this actor does a great job at this scene. He's just like low key, like very charming.
Yeah.
Very engaging. You know, Lyra is like,
she hasn't seen a Stranger Danger episode, so or ad. So she talks to this random person. And we both said that at first we thought it was strained credulity that she didn't recognize him right away. But when you think about it, she only kind of runs past him briefly at that.
Yeah.
And I do feel like they're going to say, or they're going to have her say, I know him. I recognize him, but I can't figure out where he comes from.
Right. And if you watch the scene, it's like she barely even is like looking at him, really.
Right.
She's like intentionally like,
context is king. I can't remember people's names out of context. I'm notoriously bad at it. And so I can completely see how she wouldn't be like, oh, that was the guy in my mother's apartment. That makes sense.
Right. After everything that's happened to her since then. I mean, that's the night that she escaped. You know, her primaries are probably with that.
So Carlo Boreal introduces himself as Charles Latram. Mm-hmm. Hands him. He's not wearing the Panama hat. No, of note.
Nope. He looks great.
He does look great. Hands her a card. On which it says, Charles Latram, antiquarian. Are you sure you're an antiquarian? Can you have a business card? When exactly does he go and make business cards?
Right. Hey, Mr. Latram. Yeah. Are you an antiques dealer? Is there a misspelling here? I'm not sure.
It says antiquarial. I don't think that's a word. You might want to go with antiquarian.
Aquarium dealer. Don't worry. I fixed it for you.
An aquarium dealer.
I get it. Boreal's so aquarium.
He slips her this car like, hey, if you ever want to learn more about skulls, which is really weird. You might say.
Just do it.
You might say he offered her a tutorial.
A Boreal tutorial?
A Boreal tutorial. Lyra doesn't, takes his card, but leaves.
Philip Pullman, you can use that.
Yeah, feel free.
Yeah, if you were to start a little like online learning empire.
That's a freebie. So we get back to Will and his, and he like is like creeping out. Speaking of creeporeal, he's outside his mom's place.
Yeah, he texts his mom.
Little weird that he'll go sit down with his grandparents, which we'll get to, but won't go see his mom.
Yeah, that was weird. Do you think he's like, he just knows her like fragile state? Like yeah, him maybe. Showing up and then leaving right away
would be really hard.
Yeah.
And maybe he wouldn't feel like he could.
That's right. That's possible.
Tear himself away.
Yeah, definitely.
He sends her a text, which we have poured over, and it says, I am safe and well. I'll see you soon. I hope everything is all right. I love you.
Cut to the witches.
The witches.
It's drama.
It's always drama with them.
It's drama with them. Oh my gosh.
Shock. Spoiler alert. It's dramatic.
We were saying this is like, it's got like Real Housewives vibes a little bit. I don't want to do a disservice to these very good actors in their very important scene. But it's a little about like Real Housewives of the North, right? Like you could see this totally playing out as like an elaborate like Twitter feud or something between two influencers.
We must focus on the girl. We must fight the Magisterium. Ruta, by the way.
Caroline Calloway weighing in. And
here's what's interesting. Ruta is totally right. She wants to go after the Magisterium. And at the end of the episode, they're going to have a war. But the witches are also focused on Lyra. So which one happens? Maybe because we don't really see the witches for the rest of the books, they're saying, well, we need something to do with these witches.
Right.
So we'll start a war with the Magisterium.
Maybe it's like the bears and the witches versus the might of the Magisterium.
Maybe what it is you need to show on screen rather than get told later that all preconceptions about this war not being anybody's fight, that any faction of people who thinks it's not their fight, they're wrong.
Right.
It's now the witches' fight, whether they care about Lyra or not. It's the bear's fight. It's everyone's fight. And
the time has come to choose sides.
Well, they say like the great war is upon us. Like this is, you know, it's
right.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm into that. The one thing with the books that I wish we could have gotten more of, we don't see a lot of the preparations of the great war, you know, throughout the second and third books. This is like the war is being prepared for. Armies are assembling. There are skirmishes. There are actual battles. We don't see a whole lot of that until like the very end. I am all for showing us some more of that on screen. Like that is going to be super entertaining. It's going to be super interesting to see this world filled out. Seeing like witches and Magisterium and armored bears in combat would be so cool.
Hey, Will, you know what I'm really tired of doing?
What?
Trying to find new podcasts when all I do is get the same recommendations over and over from the same places.
Oh, I know it. Yeah, all the podcast apps just give you like the 10 podcasts they're trying to push on you. It's almost always the same podcast by the same big companies.
We know about MFM. We all know about MFM. They're great.
If you've had this problem, we should introduce you to The Listener.
The Listener.
The Listener is a newsletter that introduces you on a daily basis to three new podcasts in your inbox with representative episodes for each one. Yeah. So you're not scrambling around trying to figure out how to get into these podcasts. They say, this is a great podcast. This is the episode to listen to. Check it out.
These recommendations are great, diverse audio outside of the usual bubble of big publishers. They uncover gems from creators around the world. As a paying subscriber, you don't just get the email newsletter, you actually get access to a personal feed that can deliver recommendations straight into your favorite podcast app. It's very cool.
These recommendations actually come from like a human being. Her name is Caroline Crampton. She's a podcast industry expert. She listens to dozens of hours of podcasts every week. She filters out the very best to surprise and delight you every day.
Extraneous listeners can get 2 months free by going to thelistener.co and using the code STAYEXTRA20. That's STAYEXTRA20 at checkout. Remember, go to thelistener.co and use the code STAYEXTRA20 for 2 free months of this great daily podcast recommendation service. Mary Malone.
Mary is so cool.
Okay, the next scene is Mary Malone. We just started yelling Mary. The next scene is we get to meet Mary Malone.
I was worried about this scene. I thought it was going to be boring or is going to be a letdown or isn't going to, because it's a tough scene. Like,
and I've never seen this actress before do anything. I know she's known for some things.
Right. Yeah. She's new to me. it's really good, and it's really good because Mary Blown is really good, and she's Irish, and she's Irish, delightful. And she's good.
You just want to spend time with her.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, every cool woman in this story is wearing short pants and sneakers.
It's like, you how you know, like, if you're cool.
Yeah, you have like Will's grandmother, Mary Malone, Lyra, mm-hmm. all with this like short pants sneaker look, which mm-hmm. I'm into. Lyra approaches the room that the alethiometer told her to look for the door with a mountain on it, yep. which she has a postcard of Mount Fuji on the front. Yep. A lot of Asian influences in her room. There's two bonsai trees. She mentions the I Ching book. A lot of little touches that shows that she's touched by Eastern philosophies.
She's been schooled in Eastern philosophies.
Much like Will. So many Wills in her life. But when Lyra walks in, she's like on the ledge looking at birds.
Yeah, she's just looking. My favorite part of this is that when she hears someone open the door and walk in and close the door and is now standing inside her otherwise empty lab,
yeah.
she does not say anything or move.
Nope.
She just stays hidden behind the projector watching the birds.
So Lyra and she connect very quickly, and Lyra took "Don't lie to the scholar," as the alethiometer told her, to mean just say everything to the scholar. Just have it all tumble out of your mouth. And she does this kind of like broken mix of things, but you can tell she knows she's exactly where she needs to be.
Yeah.
Lyra's connection to dust and to the universe is growing outside the alethiometer. Mm-hmm. It's growing here. It's growing when she touches the window. Mm-hmm. It feels like she's trying to feel it. And she does feel it.
Yeah.
And again, she's starting to know when she's in the right place, to know when she's on the right path. So she has these kind of like broken, nonsensical explanations.
Yeah. And the scene, the scene doesn't really make sense. The writing in the scene is a little awkward, but it's such an awkward scene to make sense. Mm-hmm. But what you said, I think really makes sense. All of the Mary Malone scenes, but especially this scene, it's like there's a momentum to it. It's like something is kind of pushing them forward. Mm-hmm. Like you get the sense when Lyra says, she does her whole crying thing, and then she says, "You need to tell me about the particles in your experiments," which is like a total non sequitur. And you get the sense that if you played that scene out 10 times, 9 of the times, Mary Malone would be like,
"Why?
This doesn't make sense. You're a strange child. I'm going to find your parents and like,
right.
go Let's back call to watching the birds.
Authorities." Yeah, or, like, yeah.
I'm not going to tell this child about my research. But this one time, for some reason, she just says yes.
The earnestness. "I need you to tell me about the particles." She carries it. Daphne Keene carries it off amazingly. But she does. The weirdness of saying with that intensity, "I need you to tell me about the particles you study." And Mary's just like, okay. Because Mary's a woman of faith. Whether or not still says so. She's like, all right, well, this is weird. Let's go with it.
Right. The way Lee can't be trusted to talk about his motivations. I think Mary Malone, she says that she's left all that stuff behind, but it's still part of her.
No, it's part of her. She's maybe the only person who fully believes in both faith and science and that they can be compatible.
Yeah.
Who has Eastern philosophies also baked into her knowledge. She's like the only person in the world, but she's, and who studies dark matter. So maybe she is the only person in the world. So it's a very unique set of skills that makes Mary Malone the right person.
Yeah.
So she tells her about the dark matter with their little stale cookie scene, which they kept in, which is very cute.
It is cute. And Lyra eats it, doesn't even notice. We have to think about Lyra has been eating God knows what for mm-hmm. God knows how long. Mm-hmm. So she's like, stale cookies. It's better than the, you know, rotten seal meat I was eating for months up north or whatever.
Yeah. They drops the reference to Keats and negative capability.
Yeah.
I respect a television show not dropping that, not dumbing it down.
Right. But throwing in little Easter eggs. So they're not going to spend 5 minutes explaining what that is. Mm-mm. But if you're interested or if you know, it's cool.
So they did really neatly explain what it is. Expectation without impatience. What a great, perfect way to encapsulate the alethiometer state. Mm-hmm. Negative capability, which we've talked about lots in our previous episodes when it came up in the book. And Mary really believes in her discoveries, really believes in her research, is enraptured by it. Another little Easter egg is when she's looking, she's connected to the cave. You see a vision of her looking through amber.
Yeah.
She's looking at a piece of amber and she drifts off, and that's going to become very mm-hmm. important. But it's when she looks through amber that she connects with dust. They are setting up a lot of things.
They really are. Yeah. It's
very cool.
The show manages to get us invested in the designs of the particles on the screen, even though a second ago, we didn't even know that those existed.
Yeah.
That's a neat little trick.
Mm-hmm.
And so to see those particles start to turn into shapes while Lyra is like manipulating the alethiometer in her mind.
Yeah.
Because we see her fingers moving.
I got to say something. I feel like such an idiot. It never occurred to me that in the scene in the book, the shapes that were on the screen were that of the alethiometer.
I don't know if it occurred to me either.
Of course, that's what that is.
Right.
So she's reading the alethiometer through the dust on the screen.
It's just speaking to her in the language she understands.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing her do the alethiometer without the alethiometer, you say that like one sign of really powerful wizards in Harry Potter is if you do magic without the wand.
Yep.
It's like you are the vessel rather than something else.
It's next level.
Yeah.
It's the Jedi mind tricks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's the Jedi transcending.
Yes.
You know, it's the force isn't a thing. It's the space between the things or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely.
In that movie. So this is a cool little, I don't know, I got a little shivers watching her.
Yeah, same. The alethiometer senses the urgency and is moving them along their path.
Yeah.
Too. And then she runs out of the room.
And she's like, okay, bye.
See you later. Gotta go.
Mary's like,
the alethiometer turned into her iPhone, flashing an alarm.
Right.
The time signal came up. It was like,
that's hilarious.
You have to go.
I'm picturing Pan in the bag as the chubby red panda, just holding his face on his hands, frowning for an hour
because
he's bored.
That's sad. We get one more little glimpse of Mary later, and then we'll close her out for this episode. Mm-hmm. First of all, she's cool. Can we just say this again?
She's cool.
She's sitting there her office talking about faith with her Irish accent, with her chucks, with her beer.
Yeah.
And not chilling, not stressing Oliver's super anal retentive attitude about their funding. It's like, just have a little faith. So back at the Magisterium, Boreal comes back.
First of all, the Magisterium, they just have a full-on secret lair. And every time they cut back to it, it's like, meanwhile, in the secret lair.
I know. It's so over-the-head evil.
I know.
So Boreal slips into the little box next to Mrs. Coulter.
I'm just picturing them, like that conversation they have with the Beatles.
Yeah.
You think they're, when they walk into work, they're like, do you think
are we the bad guys?
This is like a lair, right? This seems like a lair. Does it seem like a lair to you? This is a church. Yeah, but it's like, I don't know.
The window in my room is a really narrow slit.
I don't know, Bob. Sometimes I just feel like we're the bad guys. My demon's a nine-headed manticore. Is that a bad sign? I don't know.
Okay. So Boreal, our favorite.
Yeah. Boreal. That was about Thoriel. Melissa made that one up.
I did. Listen, this is my favorite game. My cheeks hurt. He comes and tells Marissa about Thoriel. Boreal drops the Thoriel goss.
She's like, I don't need more Moriel tutorials about Thoriel, Boreal.
We haven't even said who Thoriel is. He's Thorold. Thorold makes a return appearance. That's something we did not expect to see.
Did not expect it. Mm-mm. Love this actor. All I know him from basically is Gangs of New York.
Listen, the bringing back of Thoriel is brilliant. He comes in and he tells Marissa, he is the link to how Marissa found Lyra and Chitagatse.
Mm-hmm.
It's brilliant. We don't get it in the books. We just kind of assume she just got there.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree. It's a perfect headcanon for how this could happen.
Yeah.
It makes perfect sense. There is always, I think, that question of like, what happened to Thorold after Asriel leaves? And it makes sense. He's stuck around. He doesn't really know what to do with, like, besides serving Asriel.
Uh-huh.
So he got captured.
He got captured, yeah.
Yeah. And he's just in there with his adorable...
Adorable.
Little demon. So, very quickly, we get Lancelius's trial.
There's another person that appears in this book that appears and that we didn't expect to see.
And I just love watching this guy act. I just think that, and he's been in a lot of other things.
So the actor's name is Omid Jalili.
Yeah, if we're saying that right.
Probably not.
Probably not, right. So first of all, we see him walk in with his demon, which is, again, just so important.
If you're the Witch's Council and you get called to the Magisterium, how do you go? I know he's doing his duty. How did he think this was going to end?
I think he really felt like attacking the witches or harming him as like the diplomat
the peace
of the witches.
Envoy.
Yeah, it would be like inconceivable.
But this whole concept is wild. He walks in and explains and is just trying to create peace because a witch killed. And he's trying to calm it. But in all these situations, it's a knife's edge thing. And what he does instead is confirm their suspicions about the trial that the witches have where the to become a witch they have to walk to this certain land where demons can't go.
Right.
And they accuse Lancelius of heresy. Once he says that the witches have like a different way of looking at the world and they know things about the world, mm-hmm. they freak out. Only the authority can know about the world. And they sentence him to 8 years hard labor and demon captivity, which they don't quite explain.
Yeah, how does that work?
I don't understand because Thorold is with his demon in the basement.
Lancelius did not go to get into a debate about the world with these people.
He was just insulting the trial.
Right. He had to say something. And obviously the guy who was doing it knew exactly what he was doing.
Oh, 100% he knew what he was doing. But if you watch Mrs. Coulter's face during this, we wonder if this is what Mrs. Coulter did, because the question of how her demon can be so far from her comes up even in the series.
Yeah.
And the way she looks when they talk about that process, you know, she's not a witch, but her demon can go really far from her. It looks an awful lot like this is what she did. She went to that island or whatever.
Yeah, I think it's almost canon if we consider the show canon.
I've wondered, even reading the books, if that's what she did, if that's how she did it.
That's really interesting. Well, in the book, so this is new information, I think.
No,
right?
In the books, her demon can go really far from her too.
No, I know, but like the fact that, at the end of book three, we learn that the witches do have that process. Right.
Right.
So yeah, we assume, because obviously she didn't go to the land of the dead to do it. So.
Right. But also during this trial, Graves, who's got the spider demon and is a lunatic, who's screaming about heresy, makes a jab at Lancelius's mother, who left him be after his demon settled, because that's the witch's thing. If they have a mortal child, they don't, after their demon settles, they don't mother him anymore.
If it's a boy,
because the girl, it's a witch.
Yeah.
So he says, what kind of mother would leave their child? And you just see Mrs. Coulter wither.
Yeah.
And later she says to MacPhail, what kind of mother raised him? They are leaning so hard into her maternal instincts on this show, way more than in the book. She even, like, Boreal says, how's your daughter? How's that escape artist of yours? Knowing that she's in Chitagatse.
Right.
And Mrs. Coulter just, like, shuts down and says, my daughter is none of your business.
Yeah, she gets this, like, dangerous look on her face. This might have been one of my favorite moments of hers in the series so far. It was because the change in her face is almost imperceptible. Mm-hmm. It's like a just like a sharpening of the expression she was already wearing.
He's dead already.
Oh, yeah.
She has killed him in her mind.
Oh, yeah.
Already.
Yeah.
So they leave Lancelius's trial, and Mrs. Coulter and MacPhail are talking about what he needs to do to sew up his nomination as the main cardinal.
They talk about, like, well, the witches are vulnerable now. Like, we know their weakness.
Yeah, because they know where people go to become a witch. So if you can destroy that place, we were saying it's like carpet bombing Mecca. If you can destroy, which is, I think it's a pretty direct, I mean, you see the warships overhead.
Right. Yeah. No, I think that's exactly right. That's what we're supposed to interpret. And if you pull on the logic of these threads, it doesn't totally, like, why are they vulnerable there? There's only a few witches at a time being made there. You know, that's not.
But if you can cut off the source of their witchdom and then kill the remaining witches.
Although I think it's an open question whether this is the source of all of their powers.
Right. But this is what they believe because they're powerful and dumb.
Yeah.
But I'm not saying that this is a foolproof plan. I'm saying they believe if they kill the method by which they make witches, that there won't be no more witches. It's not true. They're not going to be exterminated.
Totally. I mean, worth pointing out that the object of this bombing is a symbolic strike to show that Father MacPhail is hardline enough to attack the witches, and that's why he gets elected. So, like, it doesn't actually have to stop the witches. It just has to get him elected.
It's just a move to seal his support inside the magisterium. But then this is really neat storytelling. It's revealed that this was all of it. Trapping MacPhail into a lie about the killing of the cardinal so that he can't come after her, and trapping the magisterium and the witches in a war against each other, and trapping MacPhail in basically the papacy, frees Mrs. Coulter from having any allegiance or
can kind of operate independently now.
Yeah, fully independently.
Yeah, because she has essentially blackmail over the Pope.
Yeah. She is her own woman now. It didn't seem like she was very constrained before.
Yeah. Like I said, it's like all of these machinations, if you really start pulling at them, they don't 100% make sense. This is not like Red Wedding level deviancy. But
right.
Right. It's just a lot of pieces that are sort of sent out into the world.
She knows Lyra is incredibly important. This maternal love is battling with, of course, she is still seeking power, but it really seems to be more like Lyra's in danger. Lyra's in the middle of this war. I'm her mother. Knock her out for several chapters. This is essentially what's going to happen at the beginning of Amber Spyglass.
Right.
One more thing about this, about Mrs. Coulter, her jacket.
It's a fascinating...
First of all, it's beautiful.
It is beautiful.
And I want it.
No, totally. And it's a very, it looks like a very intentional sartorial choice.
Yes.
To me, it looks like a hybrid of the witches' outfits, like the their war outfits.
Right.
And the magisterium clothes.
Totally.
Yeah.
She's locking them in together and they represent, also her shoes. I need her shoes. What a set of shoes. That's all cool. I have to say about that. One more note about this magisterium. Father McPhail, and we talked about this last week.
Father McPhailure.
Patty McPhail may be being set up as a replacement for Father Gomez after all. It may be just a thing that they do to show his fanaticism, but if they're spending this much effort on him, then he could be the person following Will and Lyra through season three. Like, why build up somebody new? I just don't see how, like, basically the Pope leaves his post.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe they're just setting up the idea of prepenance. So when you meet Father Gomez, who's basically scourging himself daily in, in anticipation of committing murder of children.
Yeah.
Because that makes sense.
Really excited about the whole self-scourging
thing. Yeah. Oh, one more thing about the assault on Witch Island.
Yeah. So the like montage of the barrel bombs falling on the sacred island while the cardinals choose their next. We're calling it the Pope in the world of the books. I don't think it's called the Pope. He's kind of like he's referred to as the cardinal, but you assume they're all cardinals. But anyway, the essential.
His ascension.
Very Godfather.
Very. Yes.
Very the like, I renounce you.
Okay, let's go back to Will.
Yeah, Will goes to the lawyer. There's some machinations here. It's not really in the book. It kind of gets to the same place as the book.
Yeah, instead of seeing like a guy from the first season go into the lawyer, which would have been kind of hard. I think this is neater, which it takes a little longer, but it's neater. It adds a little bit more pathos to his story as well.
Right.
They reveal that he has grandparents in Oxford, which is kind of handy. Mm-hmm. That was a little bit coincidental. And he goes and sees them. Very rich. Couple of people who have pictures of him and John Perry.
Yeah.
On the counter, and you can tell they don't like his mother.
Yeah, no pictures of Elaine.
You see how this all happened when Will disappeared. Will killed this guy's partner. Will disappeared. He went to Will's known relations and said he's going to eventually contact you for money because that's the Earth One mortal existence when you're looking for a criminal, quote unquote criminal. And so the grandfather, who is real pissed when Will says we need all this money, the reason we've gathered being that he thinks that his whole mission is for him and his mother to get away, to run away someplace. He's trying to get the money out of the trust.
Right.
It's like, I need you to help me with this trust. And the grandfather gets mad and walks away and calls the authorities. But Will is so smart because the grandmother hints that she knows things that she couldn't have really known.
Yeah.
And just that sets him off and he runs away. Mm-hmm. Knowing that the police are about to descend on him.
Right. And that's it. And he runs back and finds Lyra.
He's so mad. Will's so mad because Lyra is not there.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm messing around with you. I've been waiting for you. I thought you got caught. And she's full of energy and excitement. This is like when I get done with a good work day, I come out of my office and I just start yelling about things and you get very confused about like, whoa, slow down. But they go and they sit on their bench and they have their first real conversation where they trust each other, and Lyra shows them the Lithiometer and they're on their bench. They're on their bench. They're setting up this bench as like their place. I can't be more excited about this revelation if I tried.
I know.
They are going to look back on these times they spent together, these moments, very, very fondly.
Yeah.
When all is said and done, when this hurly-burly is done.
Yeah. I just love that we're not just getting the adventures. We're getting the times in between, the like hours and hours and days that they just spend together, most of which they're not really doing anything except just kind of like being next to each other and learning about each other.
And now they're inextricably tied now.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we're going to start seeing Will change in the coming episodes because now he's not just on the run. Like, he strikes me as, like you always talk about, you always struggle when you don't know where you're going. You don't know what your destination focused. Is. Yeah. Yes, you are. I get the sense that Will is too.
Right.
That Will in survival mode, I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, is like one thing, but Will with a mission is like different. It's like Will at his best. Mm-hmm.
Let's do our extra awards. I'm so exhausted from talking about this episode because it's so good and I'm so thrilled. This is the feeling I wanted all last season, and I'm so thrilled for what they're doing. Who's your extra?
My extra award goes to Oliver Payne. Just kidding. Mine goes to
say he's like the least extra guy.
Father Graves. Yeah.
Spidey
McJerk face.
McJerk face.
Heresy. Sir, this is a Wendy's. Our boss is yelling heretic at everybody. Are we the bad guys?
We just locked a Pisan boy up for 8 years. Are we the bad guys?
Deep in captivity? Is that like something like good guys would have?
Might be the bad guy.
We have like a department of demon captivity.
This Thorold guy has a really cute dog as a demon. Why are we holding him again?
Is this the bad place?
I can't top that. We're done. I'm thinking about my extra award. Oh, Grandpa.
Oh, perfect. Yeah.
Grandpa. Grandpa's got the extra award. Mm-hmm. Come on, Grandpa. He's your blood. What do? You call the police on him? Why would you do that? You don't love your grandson at all. Take his picture off your wall. Get out of here. Well, those are our extra awards, everybody. Boy, wait, hold on. We don't have the time to do this time. We will do it another time. You know what? Yeah. We're going to do it on Patreon. It's going to be this. It's an OMG. We're calling it an emergency OMG WTF segment.
Yep.
Why didn't Roger's demon, and this hit me out of nowhere, and I just started laughing hysterically, and Will was like, what are you laughing about? And I was like, I just realized this. Why didn't Roger's demon turn into an ant and get out of the cage?
Get out of the damn cage.
Cecilia, you didn't even have to get out of the cage. You could have just gone over to Roger. You can change into a little fire ant.
Right.
You, what?
No. Dust mite, something.
Emergency OMG WTF segment to be coming soon on a Patreon episode near year. So get onto Patreon.
Patreon.com/makingmischief. We'll see you there.
See you there. You know what else you can do until we see you there.
You, all you cool cats and kittens.
Oh my God.
Can stay
extra.